This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan, here with my co-host, Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tommy. How you doing?
Hey, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. Another week. Big X1. There was a X-class flare went off Sunday. I think it hit us on Thursday. And
I believe so, yeah.
Huge aurora borealis just went off on Thursday. So it was one of the biggest they've seen up north in a long time.
Yeah.
So, and the sun's really active right now. There's a lot going on behind the sun that's coming around now. The sunspots are popping off. And, you know, hopefully.
Let's hope nothing too big.
Oh, no, we don't want a reoccurrence of the, what was it, 1858? I think 852, 58, when they had the last really big one hit, but took out the telegraphs. That was bad.
Yeah.
Well, we got a great guest. I'm really looking forward to talking to him. It's John Lear.
Yep.
Infamous. And if you'll just give a bio on him, I'd really appreciate that.
For sure. Well, John was a captain for a major airline, and he has flown over 160 different types of aircraft in over 50 different countries. He holds 17 world speed records in the Learjet and is the only pilot ever to hold every airline certificate issued by the Federal Aviation Administration. Mr. Lear has flown missions worldwide for the CIA and other government agencies. A former Nevada State Senator candidate, he's the son of William P. Lear, designer of the Learjet executive plane, the A-Track Stereo, and founder of Lear Siegler Corporation. Mr. Lear became interested in the subject of UFOs after talking with United States Air Force personnel who had witnessed a UFO landing at Bentwaters in London, England. So we're going to hear all the stories from him tonight. So let's welcome John Lear to the show.
Hello, John.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on and giving us your time.
Thank you, Scott.
I think the way I'd like to start is how we usually start is we just do a brief history. We ask, you know, people just to give us a bullet point of how they got interested in the subjects they're working on. And how did you get interested in UFOs? Or maybe if you want to go back even further and talk about all the test flights you did, that's fine too.
Well, I had a kind of a lifelong interest in UFOs, but it wasn't really intense. You may know that my father was one of the prime contractors in 1952 for the Air Force anti-gravity program, which was completed in 1956. And that's when they had anti-gravity solved. My dad worked with Townsend and a couple of the other biggies there, but his company, Lear Incorporated, was the prime contractor for anti-gravity. Later, he sold that to Siegler, became known as Lear Siegler Corporation, and then he started the Lear Jet Corporation and started building the Lear Jet. So I had a kind of an interest, but in late 70s, there was three of us that were really interested in black projects. John Andrews, who was vice president of testers, and Jim Goodall, who was with the Minnesota Air Guard. And John, his interest was in the U-2s, mine in the SR-71, and Jim was interested in both. But in about 1980, John asked me if I had ever investigated UFOs, and I said, well, yeah, but I found out that there was nothing to it, so I hadn't pursued it. So he says, well, maybe you better take a look at it. So I kind of started reading this stuff, and in 1985, I ran into a friend of mine at a reunion here in Las Vegas for Southeast Asia pilots. who had flown during the Vietnam War. And he told me that he was at Bentwaters during the famous Christmas 1980 landing there, and that while he hadn't seen it, that he knew the guys who did, and he had been confined to quarters. And I said, you mean this stuff is true? The flying saucers are real? He said, yeah. So that really got me going. And I, 1986, I made a trip around the southwestern United States, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, California, talking to guys who had information but would not talk on the phone or send letters. And that was in the days before the web. And so I did a one-on-one interview. And when I came back, December of 1986 is when I wrote the infamous John Lear hypothesis.
Right.
And so then I started doing lectures. And at one of these lectures, I was approached by a guy, Gene Huff, in Las Vegas, who said he would trade an appraisal if I ever needed one for all my UFO material, a copy of it. And so when he came over to do the appraisal, the guy he brought along with him was Bob Lazar. And while Gene and I talked about UFOs, Bob sat there ridiculing us. He says, look, he said, I worked at Los Alamos. I had the highest clearance possible. If there's anything like that, I would have known. Well, that was in the middle of 1987. And Gene and I spent the next 3 or 4 months telling Bob all the information we had. And it was enough that he was able to confirm with Los Alamos, his friends back at Los Alamos, which he was not working at anymore, that he decided to get a job at Groom Lake. And that's when he called Dr. Teller, our father of the H-bomb, and asked for a job. And Teller said, do you want to work with me here at Lawrence Livermore, or do you want to work out there in Vegas? And Bob said, I want to work at Area 51. So Teller said, okay, let me see what I can do. So unbeknownst to me, Bob then took 3 technical interviews here over at EG&G. And the first thing I knew about it is he came over to my house around the 7th or 8th of December of 88, I guess it was. And he said, I saw a disc today. I said, a disc? He said, yeah. I said, theirs or ours? He said, theirs. I said, oh, did you get to go to Groom Lake? He said, yeah. And I said, well, why did you come over here? Because, you know, the first thing there, obviously they're going to follow you and they're going to know you're giving me this information. I said, why don't you work there for a couple of months and then tell me? He said, no, you've taken so much hardship over this that I wanted to tell you it's true. I seen them. I touched them. It's all true. So that was in December of 88 and March of 89 is when he said, we're going to test fly tomorrow night. This was March 21st. And I said, yeah, how do we do that? And he said, well, we can drive around, come in the northeast road of Groom Lake, and without getting on the restricted area, we can watch him fly. So that's exactly what happened. We drove up to Groom Lake, drove down that road. He said it would be at exactly 9 o'clock and in the evening. And we, exactly at 9 o'clock, this flying saucer comes up and does a few maneuvers, and I had my Celestron 8 telescope, and I got a clear view of it. It was a saucer. It was oriented about 30 to 45 degrees from the horizon. It was emitting a goldish, yellowish substance of some kind. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it started to go back down behind the mountains, and that's the last we saw of it that night. And we had forgotten to video it because we left the camera on the bumper of the motorhome we had driven up on. And so the next Wednesday night, I was on a trip out of town, and that's when Bob went up with Jim Taliani and some other people, and they got some video. And then the third night, which is April 6th, 1989, is when Bob and me and Gene Huff and Bob's wife went up, and that's when we all got caught by security. and they told us to clear out, and they would make it awful uncomfortable for us if we stayed there. And so the next day is when Bob got called into security at Indian Springs, and he was told in no uncertain terms, Bob, when we gave you this clearance, it didn't mean you were supposed to take all your friends up to Groom and show them this lesson. He decided not to go back to work for, the main reason was the last two times he'd been up there, he could remember going up the steps of the 737, which takes him up there, and he could remember coming back down the steps when he got back to Vegas, but he couldn't remember anything in between. He had been mind wiped for that period of time. So he didn't want to work under those conditions, and he just decided not to go back. In order to keep him from getting killed, because they threatened to kill him, we went to George Knapp, and George Knapp did an interview and splashed it all over the news. And from there on, it's all history.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good rundown of exactly what happened. Just in reference to Bob Lazar, I recently heard an interview where you said he was back working with the military-industrial complex?
I think so. He has his own company in Lanesburg, Michigan, United Nuclear. I think he's the second or third largest supplier of technical and scientific equipment to universities and schools all around the world. And I believe he does work somehow with the government.
Yeah. Are you still in contact with each other, or?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so he's working in some context, but he doesn't talk about it to you?
No.
All right. So he's keeping that under wraps.
Right.
All right. But he didn't. He mentioned he did it, but no more information, right?
No, he told us when they took him in for his security briefing, they said, "Now, Bob, you're not going to cause us any more problems, are you?" And he said...
He said no.
Right.
Okay, well, that pretty much settles that. That's very interesting. I'm wondering if he's working on the same... It's, you know, you have to think about these things, whether he's back in the same field of working. You mentioned something very interesting. You said your father worked with Thomas Townsend Brown?
Yeah.
Wow, that's back in the days of the early work on anti-gravity and unique propulsion systems and all of that. And you said that they had discovered...
They solved the anti-gravity problem.
They solved the anti-gravity. And that was how long ago?
The initial contract was in 1952, and I think it came to an end in 1956.
So since 1956, they've had access to anti-gravity.
Right.
And I can't lift my car off the ground an inch without a forklift.
Correct.
There's something wrong there, right? I mean, 56 was, it's like almost 60 years ago. Shouldn't I have a floating car in my driveway?
No, you're just a peon.
Oh, okay. I'm not allowed to have a floating car?
Uh-uh.
I bet they have floating cars, though.
Oh, well, I bet you they do.
Do you have a question, Tom?
Yeah. So in the early 90s there, what did you end up doing?
The early 90s?
Yeah.
I was flying with American Trans... I got fired at American Transair for all this UFO stuff, and then I went to work for several cargo carriers, which was a lot of fun, out of Detroit. One was Rosenbaum Aviation. Another was Connie Coletta. And I just did my flying thing.
Right. And you were still doing the UFO stuff?
No, I was interested in it, but more interested in my job, and I didn't really keep, I hear the stories and everything, but the only time I'd really get... really interested in is when Art Bell would call and we'd do a show and I'd gather up all my material and talk about it. But it's just like I am now, you know, I just have my own life, and you know, people send me information, and I collect it, and that's about all. I don't have a book. I don't have a website. I don't sell any CDs. I don't make any money off this because it's mainly for my own interest. It's for me. Yeah. And so people, they say, well, how can you prove this? And I say, I'm not interested in proving it. I'm only interested in what I believe myself. And I research for myself. If you want to believe it, that's fine. If you don't want to believe it, that's fine also.
Well, what are some of the big things that you've learned over these years that you've been dealing in this area?
Well, number one, that the Apollo program was a complete hoax. Nobody ever went to the moon. Nobody has been to the moon since. It was all a con job by NASA. I found some interesting things not related to space, and one was our Navy has underground nuclear submarine bases under the western half of the United States, including Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Nevada, California. And these are what the deal is the Pacific Ocean underlies the entire western portion of the United States. And what they do is one of their main bases is at Hawthorne, Nevada, in the middle of the desert. And they dug down 4,300 feet to the Pacific Ocean. And it just happens at Hawthorne, Nevada, there's a gigantic munitions manufacturing plant, all specifically for the Navy. And all they do is nobody ever sees any munitions go north or south on the highway. It goes straight down 4,300 feet to the enormous submarine pens underneath the ground. And that way they don't have to risk traveling on the highway. There's other bases. One is at China Lake. There's one here in Las Vegas out at near Lake Mead. There's one at Lake Tahoe. There's submarine bases all over the place under the western half of the United States. Under the eastern half, the only one I know about for sure is Memphis and St. Louis. And what they do is they bring the subs in up the Mississippi. There's a submarine technical manufacturing. They don't manufacture submarines, but components for the submarine. And they sail underwater all the way up to St. Louis and then go into these secret coves and get the work done and then sail back out the Mississippi. Same thing for Memphis. That's a huge naval base there.
I'm wondering, and this may seem like an odd question, but do you think that they have back-engineered the UFO technology, the alien technology? Do you think they've gotten very far?
No, absolutely not. It's hundreds of thousands of years ahead of us. If you know, when you consider what they're doing, they're containing a matter-antimatter reaction inside a little container that's only 4 inches tall and 1.5 inches in diameter. And what they do is they pump protons into element 115, which bumps it up to 116, which is unstable and immediately decays back to 115. And what it throws off is antimatter, and it allows access to the gravity A wave, which is how they travel hundreds of times faster than the speed of light throughout the universe. This is technology that we couldn't even hope to make.
Okay. But do you think that they have their own version of, I mean, if they did anti-gravity in 56 with Thomas Townsend Brown, they must have built something upon that for travel.
Right. That's what they have that we see, the black triangles.
The TR-3Bs.
That's all ours. They don't go into the outer space. They don't go any farther than, say, 400 miles or so. Okay. They're pretty much limited by the Van Allen belt.
Right. So that would be the TR-3Bs and the TR-3Cs.
a lot of people talk about the TR-3B, and I don't know what that is, and I don't think anybody else really does. There's been several pictures floating around of what it is, but I remember when the F-117A and the F-19 came out, and the TR-3B was along with those two other airplanes, and so why it should still be flying now is beyond me. So I think that's just the last name that somebody came up with.
Right. Now,
there's plenty of new secret projects. One of the ones is their new DEV-2, which is the one that that goes 17 minutes across the United States, and it's an arrowhead-shaped vehicle. And what it does is almost the same thing as the Spaceship One that Burt Rutan built. But it goes a lot faster, and it goes a lot higher. And what they've been able to do is they've developed this technology that's called pop-stab stabilizer, in which the entire aft end of the spaceship turns 90 degrees vertical, and instead of entering the atmosphere at thousands of miles an hour, they just float down with no forward speed at all. And it only takes them about 10 or 15 minutes to get from outer space to inner space, at which time the aft end is driven back 90 degrees and it becomes an airplane again and then lands. And the same concept is what Spaceship 1 and 2 use down there in Mojave.
Okay. Okay, so now with this space... The space missions or the shuttles are no more, right? Do you think that they're going to pull in some of this newer technology to replace it, or are they just going to not do anything? Well,
they've always had newer technology. In 1968, they started the Aquila with the Aquila rocket. What they were doing instead of going to the moon is they were building a 24-platform orbiting weapon system. And with these huge, enormous, powerful weapons that there's 24 of them, and they orbit around the Earth 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, and they can destroy anything they want. They can make any kind of weather they want. And that whole period between the late 60s and the late 90s has been in... building this constellation of weaponization. And they have, in addition to the 24 weapons platforms, they have two Navy command posts. And all they've used the shuttle for is to keep the public distracted, going to the little ISS and supposedly doing stuff there. But what they're really doing is was building these platforms.
Okay, but with the space shuttle?
Now that the space shuttle is finished, they have at least three man-approved rockets that they can send up personnel to the shuttle or to the orbiting platforms. And those take up, those take most of the people back and forth. We're led to believe that the shuttle only took up, maybe 5 or 10 people at a time, and seven people at a time, and that's about all that's up there. But there's actually hundreds of people that that are working up there, if not thousands.
How about the Chinese right now? They're building their own space station up there now.
Well, we keep them pretty much under control, and I don't know what the Chinese are really doing. They supposedly had a craft that went to the moon and took pictures, but all those were recycled NASA pictures from pictures from their orbiters, lunar orbiter 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and they were just recycled pictures from that program.
So some of the craft that they've been sending up in the last 10 years or so between the Russians and the Americans.
Okay, what is the question?
Because remember, No, I'm saying they had sent up to map the moon and numerous other projects in the last 10 years. What do you think was the reasoning for doing that?
It was just a cover for this weaponized orbiting platform constellation that they've been building. Now, they had the moon map pretty well by Lunar Orbiter 5 in 1967. So they knew pretty much what was going on there.
How long have they known of, and what was going on the moon now for the, like from the 50s or before that?
Probably before that. You know, the people, there's a civilization on the moon, and I would estimate the population to be between a billion and a half. But they've been coming down here and taking various civilians, scientists, engineers, man on the street, up to the moon for a week and 2 week tours. And so there's a lot of people that knows what's up there, but NASA is trying to cover it up at all costs, and they just are doing their best to keep the truth from getting out.
Do people tell you this information? Like, do people contact you and confirm this, what you're telling us? Do they say, you know, John, you're right, I've worked on the moon, this is what I did, this is my job?
No, because as far as I know, nobody works on the moon. I mean, they've taken visits up there.
Okay.
what's his name? The Oingo Swan remote viewed people working up there. But I don't think they're us. I think there's somebody else.
Okay.
Now, the 1.5 billion people that I told live up there are people that are just like us, but they're much more advanced, both socially and technology-wise. The Grays have control of the underground of the moon. That's where they do all their experiments. When they come down here and abduct us, they take us up to the moon and do their do whatever they do. It usually takes 40 minutes to an hour from the time they take someone out of their bed until they're back in their bed.
The individuals that are up there, are they a different species, or they're similar species to us?
Just like us.
Besides the great.
Just like us, but more like us. Socially advanced and more technologically advanced. And they live to be a lot older than we. I think they live to be 150 or so.
Hmm.
Okay. And they live on the surface of it?
Yeah, they live on the surface of the moon. The gravity up there is 68% of that of Earth, and holds a very light atmosphere, comparable to about 18,000 feet here on Earth. And if you go up there, you have to go through about a week's decompression. At least you did 30, 40 years ago. I don't know whether they've improved that or not, but and I don't know how they would improve that, but it's the same thing as climbing Mount Everest. You can only do 3,000 to 4,000 feet at a time, and then you have to get acclimatized to the atmosphere. Same thing with the moon. Since the atmosphere is so low, the pressure is so low, you have to get acclimatized. And then when you are acclimatized, you can actually go out and stand on the moon. Of course, if it isn't high noon, or when it's pretty hot, it's not as hot as NASA says, and it's not as cold as NASA says, but it is very hot and very cold.
But is there any Earth-based telescopes that we can see any of the structures or any other cities or whatever that may be up there on the surface?
Yeah, I've put a lot up on Pegasus, or on thelivingmoon.com. A lot of good places. The Damozov Craters have a fantastic city of lights there. There's also one over near the Mare Crisium. And there's another one over, I don't have my moon chart with me, but there's all kinds of places on the near side. But they're starting to cover them up with holographic projections. as our telescopes, or as public telescopes, get bigger and better, they don't want us to see it. So they cover them up with holographic projections. Now, on the far side, it's not so well covered up. And I have some good pictures on thelivingmoon.com, particularly one that shows an absolute honest-to-gosh space terminal. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And that's on there. I'm trying to remember the name of the crater it's in. But it's very, very large. And that stuff is all over the place.
Well, we're sorry, but we got to take a quick break right now. And we'll see you guys on the other side.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's L-E-P-I-N-G-O, lapingoproducts.com.
Hello, this is Scott Jordan, and I would personally like to thank all of our listeners for their emails of encouragement. It means a great deal to us. All of Spectrum shows are available in two formats, an MP3 stream you can listen to on our site, as well as a YouTube version. All of Spectrum shows are full-length and free to listen to, and if I have my way, always will be. Tom and myself do all this work out of pocket, and freely give our time and effort to giving you, the listener, the best, most informative experience possible. I would also like to thank our listeners who have donated in the past to help with our expenses. Every donation goes directly to keeping the project alive. Thank you, enjoy, and keep listening.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
Some of the things that you were just mentioning were pictures that were taken more recently, yes?
No. All the pictures that show anything on the moon were taken by Lunar Orbiter 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And they were published in 1969. And then everything after that has been airbrushed. All your Clementine, all your other stuff has been digitally airbrushed to take all indication of anything up there off the screen.
But was there any Earth-based telescopes in the last, 40, 50 years that has taken pictures of anything unusual on the moon?
Fantastic pictures, but we're talking about Mount Palomar with the 200-inch, Mount Wilson, the Yerkes Observatory, all of those huge telescopes have fantastic pictures, but they won't let the public have access to them. And if you call them up and ask for them, they say, well, we don't plan to release those for another decade or so. Mm-hmm. They're all under military control.
That's ridiculous. I wonder about, I wonder if that crater you were talking about is called, I probably get this name wrong, but
Aristarchus?
Aristarchus.
Aristarchus is, we found that, I found it, from a photo that we commissioned to have made for us by a guy in England. And he shot with a 10-inch telescope, I think 192 frames, and put them all together. And it's a fantastic structure, about 29 miles in diameter, and it has a bluish glow, like the Cherenkov effect. The Cherenkov effect is when radiation hits air, atmosphere, it turns blue, and that's the color blue that this crater is. And you can see on any pictures of the moon that NASA has issued, but it's always, Aristarchus has always whited it out, airbrushed it out.
Okay, so this was not a NASA photo. This was one that you specifically got.
Yeah.
That's why it's so bright and luminous. Yeah, it's a pretty famous picture right now, actually.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I see it all over the place. Yeah, it's become a very big, a lot of the YouTube videos when people are talking about the moon, they'll use that image. You see it everywhere now. So it's become very popular. That's why I had to bring it up, because somebody on the forum mentioned it, said, oh, you got to ask him about that. Is that a NASA image? Because if so, then NASA either messed up or, you know, something went wrong there.
So if we had copyrighted it, we'd be millionaires?
Maybe.
Maybe. It's a very popular picture, John. It's very popular. Yeah. It's everywhere pretty much now. Okay, well, what about Mars? I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on Mars. Do you believe that there are artificial structures on Mars? And if so, are they ancient or are they currently being used?
Currently being used. They aren't artificial. The population of Mars is equal to that of Earth. There is an atmosphere. There is gravity. There's about 40 different species that live on Mars. Some are exactly like us. Some are different. Some live underground. Some live above ground. But it's a very, very populated planet, just as all the other planets in our solar system are. And people don't know it, but there's actually 40 planets in our solar system, which we only know about 11. And NASA's being forced to admit more and more. But all of them are occupied. Every planet, every moon of every planet, every satellite of every planet is occupied. This solar system is so full of life that you just would not be able to believe it. Now, when NASA talks about the four giant gas giants, Neptune, Jupiter, Saturn, and what's the other one? Yeah, they are not gas giants. The only gas giant in our solar system is NASA itself.
You know, I'm wondering if there's so much life, I'm wondering if it's just not on our density. In other words, our physical density. There may be finer densities that things can exist in. Geez, we know this is true. And that there is life on all of these densities.
There are different densities, but Earth is a prison planet. We're sent here to mature our souls. And they put the Van Allen belt around here, so we cannot escape to transport our ways of our thoughts of democracy to other planets and invade other planets. We're here to mature our souls, and that's all. And once we pass away, we get a review of our life, both the good and the bad. There is no judgment. But if we haven't learned to live our life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, then we got to go back and do another lifetime on Earth to learn these things. And once we graduate, once we have learned to live our life with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, then we get to go out in the universe and play with the adults. But until then, we have to slug it out down here on Earth in our own little private prison planet. Now, there's about a billion times a billion Earths just like ours, with people, humans just like us, some more advanced, some less advanced. But we are not the only ones.
Right. So until it's like a play plan, and we're just babies that keep taking our diaper off and flinging it at the TV. So until we, you know, get not to do that, then we won't be allowed out into the rest of the universe. That makes sense. Makes actually sense to me, and I think I've actually said that before, is that I see every reason to quarantine humans. I think we eventually, as a species, have to get to space. and be out there amongst the adults. I think it's inevitable. I don't know a time frame, but I think it's inevitable. And I think this is part of planetary evolution. Every planet out there that has life on it goes through a planetary evolution, a social planetary evolution, where people can get to a certain point where they're evolved enough to play with the adults, the rest of the adults in the universe. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's basically correct. There are prison planets specifically for us to mature. Not every planet is a prison planet. As a matter of fact, most aren't prison planets. But the prison planets are the ones where we learn, where we mature our souls.
Mm-hmm. And yet we're playing with nuclear bombs and killing each other, and hence the prison planet concept, I guess.
Yeah, that's what we do. But, you know, the point is not to try and moan and groan about things you cannot correct. It's yourself that evolves. We do this one at a time. There won't be any great graduation of the planet all at once. It's one single person at a time. And the only way you can do that is to mature your own soul, live with integrity, without envy, hate, or greed, and express your love to your family each and every day. And people who do that more, instead of worrying about things that they cannot control, like wars and murders and starvation and all that, they would be a lot better off.
Right. Do you see a time when the planetary, like the species as a whole, will be traveling in space? I mean, if we're doing it one at a time, I get that, but eventually the 100th monkey syndrome kicks in, and as a planetary species, we're more evolved spiritually and all of that, and we can, at that point, from that point on, as a human race, move on into space.
No, it won't work like that, simply because it is a prison planet. It's built to be a prison planet. It's built to be a warlike planet, specifically so that we can mature our souls under difficult conditions. And okay, it'll be one at a time, and it won't be where everybody will eventually get together and go out in the universe.
Do you think that there's a secret space program? And do you think that that space program is working with other species, other alien species?
Yeah, the secret space program gets technology from one of the other bad guys. We allied ourselves to the bad guys. And they're the ones partially responsible for keeping all this corruption and commotion going on. And there's not much we can do about it. That's why I say just pay attention to yourself and you'll get through it, because it ain't going to get any better.
Okay. Okay. So you think, and do they have access to, they have access to this secret space program? They have access to stuff that they built, but the aliens don't necessarily go out of their way to give them, you know, technology that's 100,000 years ahead of them.
Absolutely, that's correct. They don't give us anything that we could really cause a lot of trouble with.
Okay. All right, Tom, do you have a question?
Yeah, I was wondering, in all the years of flying, have you ever seen anything yourself?
Anything strange? Three times. Once descending into Los Angeles in 1966, I was in a Learjet, and in the afternoon I was over Palm Springs, and I saw an object pass from left to right, from back to in front of me, that looked exactly like a M2F2, which was the NASA flying bathtub, the same kind that the $6 million man crashed in on TV. Only years later did I realize how ridiculous it was for me to think that a test flight like that would occur in the approach corridor of Los Angeles. All that stuff is done way up at Edwards Air Force Base. And then I saw some strange lights over Chicago here about 15 years ago that I showed the other crew members, and they, these lights would just travel along for hundreds of miles and go straight up. And there was five of them in a row that did that. And the crew was actually amazed. I mean, they had all always poo-pooing UFOs, and these guys had finally seen it for themselves. And then, of course, I saw the flying saucer that Bob Lazar took me to see. So there's been three or four times. I think there was another time, but I can't remember what it was.
Anything recently, like, say, within the last 10 years?
That I have seen?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Tom, you've seen one, haven't you? Since we're telling UFO stories?
I've seen some strange things in numerous places that I couldn't identify. One of the strangest things that I saw in the daytime was here in Toronto. I was going to go pick up my wife as I went under a bridge. Fairly low and you know, in front of me was this weird-looking dark, in the beginning I thought it was like ducks in formation, but you know, it was sort of like semi-circular, but it was kind of edgy, the edges were kind of weird, and as I got closer to it, I could see something in the center of it, kind of vibrating, but I couldn't make out anything. And as I got closer and closer, I decided to get out of the car and, you know, take a look, and it was almost like looking at a, you could see right through this outline. It was like a dark outline. You could see right through it, except for this thing in the middle that was kind of vibrating. And it was, you know, like you see in the movie sometimes when something kind of appears and then sort of disappears, a hole in space.
Okay.
In time. And, so I called my wife and I said, I'm watching this thing. I'm going to come and grab you and, you know, we can try to go as close to it as, you know, because I felt it was like no more than maybe a couple of miles from where she was working. And I, as soon as I got to where she works, it just closed up and disappeared.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Oddest thing that I saw.
Yeah. When I was 13... I was up in Nova Scotia in a place called Tatamagush, and I was down by a lake, just barting around throwing stones on the lake, and something caught my attention out of the corner of my eye, and I looked over to the left, and just over the trees was, I mean, like, I don't know, 600, 800 feet. It was low, maybe 1,000 feet above the tree line. There was this really long cigar-shaped object, bright object, and it scared the hell out of me. And there was a long path to get back to the cabin that we were visiting, that we were staying in. And I think I made it in about 2 seconds flat. I kicked up a dust storm on my way back. I ran away from it really fast. Okay. The only thing is, I can't recall making it to the cabin. I remember the running part. I don't remember making it, like going in the cabin and going, what the hell was that? But that was one early memory when I was 13. And on 2008 of October, I went out the back just to get some fresh air. And I looked up. There's a set of houses were adjacent to the road, and they were against the road. But up in the sky to the right, there was an object with 18 lights on it. Three stacked in three. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And it was like a V shape. It was like if you took a set of lights, three, and then like three and then three. So you line them up in a V. And then stack them one on top of the other three. They were like reddish lights. And I seen that, and I went, wow, that's really close. So I ran down my stairs and then was booking it to get around the houses to get a closer look at it. And just as I rounded the stairs to get to run towards the street to get down the street to look at it closer, it shot off, like it booked. And by the time I made it to the edge of the house there where I could see down the street and up into the sky, it was gone. It was gone. No sign of it. So I should have been able to see it unless it went down and then out over the lake. But it was gone. And it's funny, when I was 13, I ran away, and when I was, you know, my 40s, I ran towards. So I must be opening up. Yeah. It's interesting that we all have these sightings, and we've been interested in it for so long that the sightings, they mean a lot to us because we are interested in the field. But have you noticed, you talk to a lot of people that are in the field, and you ask them, have you ever seen a UFO? Quite a few of them say no. You find that, John?
I don't run into that many people, but I can tell you one thing. Both of you have described incidents that if you've seen one that close, then you were in that vehicle. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, you think that there was an abduction involved is what you're saying?
Absolutely, positively.
Yeah.
Absolutely positive.
Well, like I say, I remember booking it towards the cabin to get back up the cabin, but I can't recall, I can't bring back the image of running into the cabin. I don't remember running, making it. So, but that could have been just a gap in a child's memory, right? So, I don't know.
That's a gap that they put.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, you were abducted. What do you think of that?
Well, I had a lot of I had a lot of strange things when I was young, and in those days, I had just put it to, you know, an overactive imagination. But there were incidents where, you know, they were very vivid, and you know, even till today, I remember them like clearly. And it wasn't until, you know, when I got involved in these areas that I sort of had connected them to situations like, you know, Men in Black that people have described. And this was, you know, back in the 60s, which, you know, by the way, a lot of the stuff was going on in those days. For some reason, in the 90s and after that, we hadn't heard much stories about that, but they were pretty prevalent in the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Right. So do you have gaps in your memory, do you think?
Well, like I said, you know, I had vivid circumstances, you know, that were very weird when I was young, and I couldn't explain them. But, you know, like I said, as I learned more about when I got involved in the field, you know, I connected it to circumstances that people described as well, you know, right. Later.
Right. John, you said you had men in black suits following you around at one point. Do you have any memory gaps, or do you look back on things and say, maybe I was, you know, taken?
No, the only memory gap I had is when I was going to tap dancing school, when I was about 10, it was about 5 miles from my house, and I used to take the bus down, get there at 9, and then it would be over at noon, and I'd go out and get on the bus and go up 14th Street all the way back to my house. And this one time, I got on the bus, went all the way to my house, and as I stepped off in front of my stop at my house, I was standing in front of the bus back at the dance school. And that was odd. I've never been able to explain that.
That's really odd. It's almost like you... I don't even know if that's like going back in time or just been plucked out of one area and then played... There was another bus there waiting for you to take? Was it the same bus?
No, I looked up at the bus driver and I said, didn't you just take me home? And he gave me this weird look. And then I just got on the bus and forgot all about it.
That's a little odd, John.
But all of us have been abducted. You know, you don't have to ask because you get abducted once when you're 3 years old, once when you're seven, and once when you're 13. And these are normal life progressive abductions where they check and see that everything is going okay for you're growing up. And then after you're 13, then they only abduct as required and as necessary. And right. Some people never get abducted after that. Some people get abducted many more times. What it's all about, I don't know. But the Greys, who do all the abductions, they're just worker bees. They're highly advanced.
Biological computers?
Yeah, biological organisms. And they're there just to do a job. And be sure that you don't get in trouble. For instance, life is already written. And the day you die is already the day you die. You can't extend it by not smoking or eating vegetables or anything like that. The day comes along that you're going to die, that's it. And those guys, the Greys, are in charge of that. And if you happen to get in an accident when you possibly going to get killed, they have to save you. That's why you hear some stories of people that are in airplane crashes. They say, I can't believe it. I was standing there in total flames, and it was like a bubble of fresh air that followed me as I walked out along the grass and got out of the fire. Those kind of things are what the Greys do.
Okay. So miracle, it's like a miracle event,
right.
is done through technology.
Right. You hear often stories of people who have died and somebody says, I'm sorry, it's not your time, you got to go back.
Right, and they see images of loved ones that have passed before them and those sorts of things.
Yeah, well, when you get reincarnated, just after you die, you go to a holding area for a very short time, and you get to see all your loved ones, and it's a great reunion, and everybody's happy and everything, and then you get the life review, and then you're sent back. But, of course, your memory for all that is completely wiped, so there's no possibility you could remember a previous lifetime.
Well, that, and it would be very confusing to hold multiple lifetimes in your brain and try to think cohesively from a day-to-day, day-to-day living basis. It would make it incredibly difficult to carry on because you'd have conflicting thoughts from another life when you were, you know, you did some other things, and you have nowadays you have different thoughts about, you know, say you were back in the early days, you had certain thoughts about women and maybe you were discriminating and stuff like that, but in this life you're open. Well, you can't have those two thoughts in the same brain.
Right.
So you need a wall there, just to be sane. So that's a good thing. You know, we had a guest on talking about reincarnation. He says, and he was saying, you know, it could be dangerous having too much information from previous lives. It just, you know, might be schizophrenic. That was his thoughts anyway.
Yeah.
What about aliens that are helpful? Aliens that look kindly on humans and want to help them. What's your thoughts on that?
There's not many. They're not allowed to come here and fool around and help with the progress, because that's the reason we're here, is to deal with the problems ourselves. And that's why if you commit suicide, you not only do you get turned around back on Earth, but you get put into situations much worse than you left, because you have to learn how to deal with that situation. So they don't want anybody coming around and curing cancer or any miracle help like that, unless it's not exactly your time to die.
Right, okay. So, and you think that this is part of the reason for the suppression? suppression of anti-gravity, suppression of free energy, suppression of miracle cures like cancer and stuff like that. We've had guests on that said cancer was cured decades ago. It's just doesn't make any money for the pharmaceutical company to cure something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's just greed and envy that the reason we don't have anti-gravity and free energy and stuff like that.
And do you think that it's greedy humans that are responsible for keeping that program going?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do you think there's a group? I mean, we could say words like Illuminati, the elite, you know, there's other all kinds of terms for them, but just say, you know, the big money men. You could just say that.
They're real. They exist. They've got all kinds of plans, which, you know, one of them is to depopulate the earth by 4 billion people, but it'll never happen. They don't have that kind of power.
They have quite a lot of power.
They think they do, but they don't.
Well, they've kept all this stuff repressed for decades. And do you think it's just decades? Do you think that there's just decades involved? Or do you think that there's thousands of years involved in manipulation? Or even longer?
Thousands of years, because I have, traced this moon hoax back to 1850, when the Danish mathematician, I think his name was, I can't remember his name, but anyway, he started giving a lecture to the Royal Observatory about life being on the moon and his reasons why he believed it. And then U.S. Admiral, let's see, what was his name? I forget. He came in 1870 and absolutely destroyed the guy. Didn't have a shred of evidence. It was just innuendo. And then everybody completely forgot about this guy. So the U.S. Navy has been helping cover this up ever since they've been in existence.
But I know that there was a split up of the forces. Wasn't there a split up in the 47, as well as the creation of some of the security?
That was when the Air Force was made a separate group from the U.S. Army. It was no longer the U.S. Army Air Corps. It was the United States Air Force. And that's when the CIA was initiated.
Yeah. During that time frame, that secretive time frame, 1940. A lot of stuff seemed to have happened in 1947, 48. Just came into being. So what about humans? We've had other guests on talking about ancient humanity, a manipulation of the human DNA by an alien race back a long time ago. What's your opinion on that? Do you think that the humans are just, you know, from ape all the way to human, or do you think there was some tinkering involved?
No, there's nothing to do with apes. We were made from ground zero by the aliens. The things we wear that make us look like a human, we call meat sacks. And they're specifically to contain our soul while we are learning to mature here on Earth. Where that gets confused is people say millions of years ago. Well, the Earth is at least 12 billion years old. The universe is infinite. And back during that 12 billion years old, there's been at least 15 complete different civilizations like Atlantis, Lemurus, and all those different names you hear. And they'll grow and prosper for like 25,000 years, and then they'll gradually weed them out and replow the earth, make it a brand new earth, and then they'll start another civilization. Nobody dies from that because they're all off doing their own thing, either another planet or going out in the universe. But all these different civilizations, there's hints of them. There's a huge civilization in the Sahara Desert, ex-civilization. There's near Japan, they found stuff there, Bimini. The old J Road shows ancient construction there. They're all over the places. They're right out in plain sight
Right.
Everybody kind of ignores it and just kind of doesn't think about it.
Yeah, Michael Cremo talks about human civilizations going back 50 million years.
Easy, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, just... But the thing is, it's so hard to accept by the mainstream archaeologists just because of the fact that in their minds, it's not even possible that that could occur. So if it's not possible, there's no way you can bring it up.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. They've decided it's not possible.
That's right. That's why we don't bother discussing it with them.
And it doesn't matter how much evidence. If you bring evidence and set it in front of them, they would just say, there's no point in me even looking at that evidence because it's impossible.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
Yeah, I'm just the Wright brothers ran into the same problem. The scientists of the day said, lighter than air travel is impossible, therefore we don't need to go and watch your demonstration.
Right.
It's impossible. Why would we go watch something that's impossible? And I think this is happening, and maybe it's always happened. I don't know. But my main question is, do you think that the control structure is working hand in hand with the human control structure, or do you think it's more of a directive thing? You do this, you do that, you do this. From the alien perspective, is the aliens sort of controlling the ultimate show and sort of giving the elites directives what to do, what not to do, or are they just letting them do their own thing? It's just humans being greedy. They're going to be greedy anyway.
Well, there's bad aliens and there's good aliens. Unfortunately, we allied ourselves with the bad aliens. Now, the good aliens are standing by to...
I didn't align myself with those guys. Nobody asked me.
Yeah, but the elites did, and that's who's in control now. But eventually, the good aliens will be around, and it'll be a little bit better than we have now, but, you know, it'll be no great shakes.
Right. So it still comes back to you doing your individual work to make yourself a better person.
Right.
Don't look for a savior coming from the stars, because it's more than likely not going to happen.
Absolutely, 100% correct.
Okay, so this brings me up to disclosure. What do you think about the disclosure movement? Do you think that that is a possibility, or? And you can see in my mind the UFO question is been over for a long time, but government disclosure. Do you think that there's going to be an official? And not just the records that are showing up from all the countries out there of their UFO investigations, but I mean an official statement saying UFOs are real. We've known about it for a while. We didn't tell you guys because we didn't want to worry you. And it's bad enough with the economy.
No, absolutely not. There will be no disclosure under any way, shape, or form. Disclosure will come in about 5 to 6 decades from now, but it won't happen like an announcement. It'll just happen because the little kids that are growing up with aliens will say, oh, yeah, well, I knew they were there. And the guys that are living now that are so vehemently in denial, they'll already be dead. So it'll just be, well, you know, I knew they were there all the time. It won't be a disclosure. It'll be just, oh, yeah, I knew they were there.
So you think it's going to be a gradual thing and you don't see faxes and letters to Washington?
No, that's ridiculous.
Asking Obama to come out and fess up.
It's ridiculous. Obama doesn't know anything. The President of the United States doesn't know anything about UFOs.
Right. Because when he was asked about UFOs, Obama said, well, I'm more worried about the life on planet Earth. And yeah. So it was a complete, whether it was a dodge by him, a knowing dodge, or whether it was just a political answer because he's been told not to talk about the subject, or he just, like you said, has no clue.
Yeah, no clue. They used to give the president a little bit of knowledge. They gave Reagan some. Of course, George H.W., because he was the director of CIA, knew a little bit more. Incidentally, the director of the CIA doesn't know that much. A director is not told anything. That's why he's a director. The deputy directors know all the good stuff. But they've told the presidents less and less. Clinton admitted that there was a secret government over which he had no control. And so there's no point in telling the president because he has nothing to tell them. They don't know what, you know, what would he say?
Yeah.
Well, about aliens? We know about them. We're doing business with them. Everything is hunky-dory. There's no way they can open that Pandora's box.
Right. What about JFK? Yeah.
JFK knew, was the last one to know as much about it, and that's why he was, hold on just a second. JFK knew about aliens, and part of the reason people claim he was assassinated was because he wanted to release that information. But the truth is JFK was assassinated by Mossad because of his stance over Dimona. And he kept going to Ben-Gurion, and it was a royal pain in Ben-Gurion's butt because he wanted a legitimate, full exposure investigation of Dimona, and they wouldn't do it. So Ben-Gurion, in the summer of 63, gave the order to Mossad to kill him, and then he resigned. And so then Mossad, with their links to the CIA, specifically James Jesus Angleton, was able to pull it all together and get rid of him and get rid of that Dimona problem.
Right, so that was, so the UFO stuff was just a secondary reason, but that was, that would be the main reason.
Yeah.
I mean, he gave a speech about transparency. He was coming down pretty hard on the whole transparency thing. That been yet another reason. And of course the Dimona thing you were talking about.
Yeah.
Tom, do you have a question?
Yeah. I was wondering if you can tell us about some of the pictures that we were talking earlier from the shuttle. Well, that shows the
stars.
The stars in the background.
Yeah, well, part of the Apollo hoax was they couldn't afford to show any stars on the moon because they couldn't place them exactly where they'd be, and they knew they were going to get caught. And so they put out this a fabricated story that you couldn't see the stars because there was no atmosphere. And now all the pictures that come back from the shuttle show no stars to prove that. But somehow, accidentally, a couple months ago, a reel of video got through without being airbrushed. And that's now on several forums. And it shows stars clearly, bright and beautiful, as the shuttle is flying through space, through outer space.
I'll actually put that picture. You show me that picture, and I will put that picture under your name and your bio on our upcoming guests area. And then in the next day after the show airs, it'll be in a past guests area under your name, John Lear. And I will put that picture. It is a phenomenal picture. There's also, Tom noticed, and I believe John also noticed it as well, there's a green, Tom, what did you say? There was a green smudge or something?
Yeah, it looks triangular, and it looks like it's to be in two pictures from different angles. So, yeah, it's unusual looking anyway. So,
what do you think it is, John?
It's a ship. Somehow it accidentally got caught in the film. There's so many ships that go back and forth to the ISS from the from all the other stuff we have in space. It's amazing we haven't caught one by now, but they're pretty careful about it. But somebody engineered this particular film to come through that not only had a ship but had stars in it. So somebody's going to be in a little trouble here next week.
Yeah, it's an amazing picture. I don't know what it is. It's this weird. You'll see it. It's when I put the picture up, it's in the bottom right-hand corner. Okay, of course you can see all the stars in the background, but in the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see a green triangle. and it's really weird looking. So I want you guys to check that out. Tom, do you have a question?
Yeah. So what are you doing nowadays, John?
Well, I just hang around my house. I've retired for about 11 years now. And I sit at my computer. I watch a lot of TV. I can't move around very well. I'm suffering from old injuries. I had a couple of airplane crashes, and I had a major back operation here about 3 years ago, so I'm not able to walk very far. So most of the time I spend here playing with my grandson and entertaining him and spoiling him. And he's 10 years old now, and I taught him how to build a paper airplane the other day, and he won the contest at school, so he's all happy at that. And he has his own little motorcycle and a dune buggy, and he's a really good driver, and he keeps me busy.
Oh, that's great. And do you still hear from a lot of insiders? Are you still getting information sent to you? Like, people must send you information all the time.
No, I've been under surveillance for 27 years. The surveillance has been 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And they have a house across the street, which is the one I think they surveil from. And my computer, phone, everything else is tapped. And they know exactly what I'm doing. So I don't get many phone calls. The real shut off in information came in 1990, and I don't know what started it, but all of a sudden all my contacts collapsed, and I heard, even Bob said, that those guys up there to work at Groom Lake get a lie detector test every 90 days, and one of the first questions they get is, do you know John Lear, and what's your relationship with him? And so I'm blocked from getting any good information.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a shame.
You're a bad guy now, eh?
You're a bad guy now. You pissed off the elites by talking too much. But
yeah.
Do they follow you? Like, if you jump in your truck or your car and go to town?
I don't look, so I don't know. And I'm not very good at watching, for tails. It doesn't matter to me, what they do, but... As the fact is, I don't drive very much, so they don't have very much work to do.
No, they can just sit in their vehicle. Yeah, we've had a few incidents, haven't we, Tom, with our conversations being ended on Skype rather quickly. We record all of our shows via Skype, and we've lost a lot of stuff like that.
My emails keep disappearing.
Yeah, I had to do a test on our website email today because you received an email and I didn't. The only way I knew about that email was because you forwarded it to me and it had our email address on it, and I went and looked, and I'm like, I don't have that. Why do you have that and I don't have that? So it's disappeared. I never did get it at all.
I have a terrible problem with email. I get half of what's sent to me, and half that goes out doesn't get to where it's going. So daughter, who lives in
Brooklyn,
she has to send it to, if she's going to send me one, she has to send it to my wife and another friend to be sure I'll get it.
Yeah, that's what we were doing as well. We were sending it to different...
Well, yesterday I had a situation with one of my friends who sends me email every day, and it's always about UFO type stuff, and I hadn't received anything for about 2 weeks, and he told me he was away for a few days, but a couple of days ago he said he sent me a bunch of stuff, and then yesterday he sent me a bunch of stuff, and I said, well, I haven't received them. So while we were having a conversation, he sent them again, and again I didn't receive them. So then I said to him, just send me like a message that just says test. And of course I received that. And then again, he tries like the same stuff again. Nothing that's had UFO on it. If it said anything, related to UFOs, never came through. Anything that was a test thing or any other subject, they came through.
Yeah, my test email today worked, but I didn't get that other information. It just didn't show up at all. It's gone. I don't know what happened. But we've had a couple of things like that. We were doing an interview with Klaus Donner, and they shut us down. Like, his internet, the whole conversation stopped. It got closed, and his internet shut off, and his computer shut off. He had to reboot his computer, reboot his server, restart Skype, and then it was a big trial that we had to go through, but it was ridiculous. But this sort of stuff is normal, don't you think? Did you do you have people that track you when you do forum posts?
Do I have what?
You know when you do your forum posts, you post on some forums.
Yeah.
And when you do some forum posts, do you find that there's people that come in and sort of poo-poo what you're saying, and it's the same, an internet stalker, like, you know, same person?
Not as much as they used to.
Yeah. You used to have that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. When I was on ATS and when I was on
Open Minds.
But now that I've been over at Godlike Productions, I've got 122 pages there and very, very few naysayers.
Okay. So you're not getting pounded so much. What about the Sun? Have you been keeping up with the Sun and what's going on with the Sun?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think on May 7th, when that picture came out of the object on the about the 4 o'clock position of the Sun, that was a new planet being born, the size of Earth, and not much was said about it. But I'm pretty sure that was a planet being born.
And is it still visible now?
Yeah, it's orbiting the Sun now. Where its final orbit will be, I don't know. Okay. But all planets come birth from the Sun.
So from suns, that's where they come from. Okay. Yeah. Well, Dave, have you seen the pictures of the Sun with all the objects that these small objects are around it? And I'm not talking one or two. It was like a dozen objects around the Sun. Yeah, and then they just disappeared. You didn't see them. They were airbrushed, or I don't know what, but they're gone.
I don't know, but there's 40 alien species that live inside the Sun, and it's not a nuclear reactor. It's an electromagnetic sphere, and it does not generate heat as such. So there's not going to be any explosion or anything like that, like they talk about.
Okay, it doesn't generate heat as such. So what are we talking about here as far as warming?
We have an electromagnetic wave that is filtered by our atmosphere to produce the proper temperature. For instance, mercury isn't hot enough to melt lead. Its atmosphere filters the electromagnetic wave, so it's around 70 degrees like here on Earth. The same with Pluto being cold enough to freeze an Eskimo, and it's not cold at all. Its atmosphere filters the electromagnetic waves so that it's nice, warm, toasty, 72 to 75 degrees or whatever they need there.
Okay, so the deep cold of space is what do you think of that? Is it a myth or?
Yeah.
And it has to do with atmosphere specifically. So what about deep space?
I don't know. I'd have to say I don't know.
Okay. Because if it's the atmosphere that's filtering the rays that are coming in and creating a heat or varied temperatures of heat, then the dead space, the vacuum of space, wouldn't have that atmospheric filter, I would think.
Right.
So it would be, they could be very cold, very cold. What about Mars? Does Mars have what do you think the temperature is on Mars?
72 to 75. It's just, you know, a normal Earth-like atmosphere.
Normal Earth, like walking without a breathing apparatus Earth.
Yes.
Okay. And
same as on Venus. We're told that it's 800 degrees C on Venus, which is a bunch of baloney. It's just it's a nice place to live. There's a lot of humans like us that live there, but they're far more technologically and sociologically advanced, and they don't mess with us.
They leave us alone. How about underground bases? We talked a little bit about underground bases. I noticed you didn't mention Pine Gap, because you were talking specifically about underground substations that go down very deep into the earth, underground substations. But what about underground alien-human interactive areas?
There's many of them. Dulce, of course, is the most famous one, but there are certainly others. Dulce is one of the only ones I know about.
Was Pine Gap, but would you consider Pine Gap as the same sort of thing?
No, I think that's different. I think that's basically us and some aliens. But the Dulce thing, I think, is run totally by the aliens.
Right. You know, completely by the aliens, so no human interaction?
Oh, yeah. Humans there, a lot of them.
Okay.
But, the aliens run the show.
Do you know what they're doing in these underground bases? Do you know what sort of...
No, we get the stories that, you know, they're doing genetic manipulation and all that kind of stuff, but I really don't know.
Yeah, I haven't really heard that much about it. I'm sure there's people out there that know. It's just, I don't know. Tom, do you have a question?
Do you remember who initially put out the Dulce information?
Yeah, that was me. I wrote the Dulce papers.
Where did you receive that information?
Information came from Mr. X here in Las Vegas. And the way it came to me is we were in a private UFO meeting in Crestone, Colorado with Tom Adams and some of the big UFO names, Linda Moulton Howe. And Tom came over to me and said, you know, I just got this letter from Mr. X and Henderson, and I'm not going to be out there. Would you mind taking care of following it up? And I said, sure. So when I got back from Crestone, I made the call and made the contact, and that's who transferred all the information. I got the original pencil drawings of that, what's his name, Costello made, Thomas E. Costello had made, and also he was given one of the chests, one of the boxes that had several minutes of videotape, 25 black and white photos, and about 100 pages of information. And there were six of these boxes. And Costello gave it to six of his friends to hide, and that if he didn't contact them for 8 months, that they were allowed to do anything they wanted. And so in 1995 or 96, we didn't hear from him for over 8 months, and so Bill Hamilton was the one that went to the one where we knew was down in near Dolan Springs in Arizona, and never could find it. And I don't think any of the other boxes was found. But when I got the information, I transferred the pencil drawings into pen and ink drawings, which I did, and then I copied down some of the information that was in the documents that Mr. X was able to remember, and then I sent them out as the Dulce papers. And that's where it all came from.
Now, in those days, was anybody able to verify anything?
Yeah, people that said they worked down there. Somebody said that they worked down there, but they didn't know it as Dulce. They knew it as Area Project D or something like that. I forget. But, yeah, I mean, Bob Lazar heard it up at S4. And so, yeah, there's plenty of confirmation that it was there, that it still is there.
That's good. Some of the Mars pictures that have been floating around now and on the internet for the last couple of years. What are your thoughts on that? And where you think most of those are, or
they were all
are taken, they valid pictures?
No, all the Mars pictures that you're seeing now were taken either in northern Canada or Antarctica. And ever since Malin Space Systems took over the Mars program, there hasn't been one photo, I don't think, that's actually been taken on Mars.
And a lot of the pictures that, you know, I mean, from the phase of Mars and many other pictures that have been showing up on the internet as of late that look like structures or many other things that people are claiming, what do you think about those?
They're just putting that out as disinformation to make the people happy that there's a structure here and a structure there, but none of those are real pictures.
Okay. And because as far as the moon, as we were talking earlier, they're only from back in the 60s. There was nothing after that that...
Everything after that was put out. Airbrushed or digitally sanitized.
Yeah, there seems to be a whole crews of people that their job is airbrushing or, you know, smudging. You see a lot of this smudge. Well, you've seen them, Tom. The smudged pictures of the moon and Mars, and you'll see an area, and there's obviously it's a landscape, but then you'll see this one gray, you know, lighter gray smudge.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, they
towers and all kinds of stuff. You know, you go in, there's three towers in a row, every one of them smudged. I should be able to see a clear image there.
That particular picture is a composite of an antenna from whatever orbiter was taking the picture, and they put that antenna, which looks like it touches, it's coming up from the ground. It's not. It's from the spacecraft, and that composite was three of those put together, and then smudged out. Who did it? I don't know why.
Yeah, so that's what that is. But there's lots of different smudges, right? I mean, you can see them all over the place in the pictures. Yeah. Gray area smudges, and all kinds of weird things that are you just can't see them because they're not there. It'd be nice to have the pictures, but what would we see if we could get clear, definitive, today's technology pictures of the moon surface? What's your opinion?
Well, since everything is protected with holographs, you wouldn't see much. Now, if you could get a clear picture of Saturn, you probably wouldn't be able to talk for a day that you would be so dumbfounded at how much construction and huge buildings and all kinds of stuff up there that you really would be just dumbfounded for about a day.
Well, hopefully one day we'll be able to see those pictures. Not much of a chance of that, though, right?
No.
Unless our ground-based, privately owned telescopes can get powerful enough that we can take digital video and images and pictures, and that's when we're going to get there, right?
Well, I kind of hoped that the Godlike Productions was going to do that, but they had that 21-inch telescope set up, and when they get it going, they said, no, that's for deep outer space. We're going to use the little one, the 14-inch, for the moon. So I don't know what's going on there.
Well, I mean, have you suggested that they use the 21-inch for the moon and get nice, clear pictures and put them up on the site? That would be awesome.
Yeah, I did a couple times, but, you know, when you're talking to a brick wall.
It doesn't work out so well.
No, and I like it over at Godlike Productions. They're a good place, and nobody bothers me, and I get to have my own little thread there. And so why should I mix it up? Because I know, you know, basically what their problem is.
Right, right. Okay. So are you currently, say in the last while and in the future, are you still doing any conferences or talks? Or, I mean, I'm sure, surely there's stuff happening in Las Vegas.
No. Number one, I never get invited. Number two, I probably wouldn't go if I was invited. I'm just not physically able to do that kind of stuff anymore. So I do radio shows from my desk where I'm comfortable. And when I'm done, I can lay down on my bed and go to sleep. But as far as going anywhere, first of all, I won't get on an airline anymore. After 40 years as a professional pilot, I'm not going to be humiliated with some TS guy sticking his finger up my rump. And so I won't do any air travel. So that leaves just driving or the bus. And I just don't want to do that.
Right, right. I hear you. There's a lot of people that are, you know, if they can afford not to do it, they don't do it. If they don't, you know, want to travel out all over the world, they'll just take trains and buses and stuff like that, but they're avoiding the TSA agents and their rubber gloves. So, yeah, I can understand that. That's fine. Yeah. Or the other thing is people come to your house to interview you as well.
Yeah, there's been several TV programs come here, but not very little actually goes to the air. For instance, in March, National Geographic spent 8 hours here, and they filmed 6 hours that I know of. And not only did it not make the air, but they won't even answer my question as to, is it going to be on ever, or did it get to the cutting room floor, or what? And then just recently, the decoders came up and did a 2 or 3 hour session. And I haven't heard word one from them, and I've looked at their programs in the future, and it doesn't seem to be anything that would include what I had to say.
Mm. Well, I can guarantee you, although this is a pre-record, I do very little editing. I edit out any ums and ahs and talkovers and stuff like that, but other than that, there won't be any editing. What you say is what you get.
Great.
Okay, so it'll be, as long as this interview is now, is what it'll be. Come airtime. And that's just the way we've always done it. Right, Tom? We don't edit stuff out.
Yes, sir.
We only edit out stuff like ums and ahs and any long pauses while people are thinking and about what they want to do. So hopefully in the future you'll be doing some television appearances because the big one was the Project Camelot interview. That was seen to be a very big interview.
Yeah.
I mean, that reached a lot of people. A lot of the people that probably didn't even, had never heard of you, weren't aware of the Bob Lazar story. It helped out a lot, and that reached a lot of people. They have UFO meetings in Las Vegas as well.
Not that I've heard of.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Well, there used to be numerous of them back in the 90s.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun back then.
Back then was the fun times. Yeah.
Well, you're not even doing anything right now, Tom, as far as the Toronto meetings. I can't remember when they stopped. Was it mid-90s?
Mid-90s, the late 90s, yeah.
I mean, you can only afford to run this stuff.
The 90s were the best times, I think. That's when everything was going on. Then, you know, things mellowed out afterwards. I think everybody mellowed out. And in the last dozen years or so, it's been kind of quiet.
What do you think of the current? What do you think of the current state of UFO investigation, John?
Well, current state of UFO investigation. I don't know how to answer that. I'm satisfied with what I'm doing. There's still people that believe there may be UFOs, but there couldn't be anybody inside them. And there's still people that really think there's going to be disclosure, and they really think that if they write a letter to Congress, that Congress will do something about it. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like I say, I'm in it for myself. The information is for myself. I don't care what anybody believes, you know? So
exactly.
When somebody says, well, how do you expect us to believe? You know, I don't care what you believe. I'm in it for myself.
Right, and you know what? We could change our views tomorrow. I get new information that alters something. I'm like, okay, I guess I better rethink that. I might think differently next week. You know?
That's exactly what I say. I say my statements are only good till midnight. And after that's a new day. So don't come back and tell me, well, wait a minute. 2 days ago you said da-da-da-da-da. And I'll say, yeah, that was 2 days ago. And that's why I don't make a CD or DVD or write a book or anything like that, because it'll be outdated by the time it gets out.
Right, because there's always new information. With the availability on the internet right now, and so many people with video cameras in their phones, pretty good quality video as well. There does seem to be more UFO images on the internet and on YouTube and on pictures, but this is one of the difficulties is there's so many hoaxes out there that it's hard to wade through the videos and pictures to see something that's not, you know, that's really not an unidentified object. It's just, you know, just something that's normal.
Yeah.
And fakes, of course, with the technology nowadays, with this studio stuff that you can do on your computer, you can make a video and it will be amazing. And it'll be like Steven Spielberg quality stuff and put it out there on the internet and fool a bunch of people. It's difficult. It is difficult nowadays. Back in the 90s and late 80s, you get some images, although they weren't the best images in the world, they were something that was pretty darn good. But nowadays, with the technology, it's just so difficult. Do you see a lot of that?
Yeah, that comes up with the Billy Myers stuff, and people try to say it's a hoax, and look at what we can do on digital. And I say, we didn't have digital back then. That's real stuff. Those are real pictures, real UFO, real saucers that you see.
Yeah. Right, and a lot of the early stuff is real saucers as well. And not just the Billy Meyer stuff. There's a lot of stuff that's real, but you know, like I say, you find that the skeptics aren't as prolific nowadays. They're not banging out in eight cylinders anymore.
They stay into their own groups. Like you have the Phil Plait, Bad Astronomy. You have the Jim Obergs. They're running out of gas. You know, we used to argue about different photos and what they showed until I found out there were no photos. Nobody went there. And so there's not much they can say to that.
Right. And also I would say the media is opening up a little bit. Like it used to be back 15 years ago, you'd have one guy talking about UFOs or a UFO case and three skeptics, right?
Exactly.
Nowadays, you'll have three guys talking about UFOs and two skeptics or one skeptic or none.
Yeah.
The whole series of Ancient Aliens, totally different spin through the media changing right now. Do you believe that's true?
Absolutely.
Why would they do that? Why now? Why? What's the deal now? What's changed that now they lowered the giggle factor?
It's getting embarrassing to be a skeptic.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're afraid of getting pounded.
Right. There's a lot of sharp guys on the web now, and they just can't, they just don't want to come on and be made a fool of.
Right. So they're not showing up on the Larry King show.
Right.
They're there. Well, who was there? Bill Nye and the other guy when there was, what case was that? That was the one where the UFO was shot out of the sky. There was a beam. And also the case where the nuclear weapons were being shot down.
Yeah.
And they didn't have much of... The skeptics didn't really put on a very good showing in that one. And it seemed to go downhill from there. Now you've got Ancient Aliens every week that's showing a new episode. Well, I think they're on their... What are they on, their third season now, Tom?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
There's a number of shows on there now.
Well, I think that's a good thing. It's a good thing because it's going to evolve people's outlook on UFOs and on sort of the secrecy. And of course, we have all these videos of the elite control system that's, you know, we were talking about 20 years ago. Now it seems to be a new thing. It's not a new thing. Let me tell you, there's people talking about it a long time ago, about the control system. And like I say, I think that the control system's been in place, or at least I think it's possible that the control system's been in place for a very long time. And it's budging very slowly. And it's being exposed.
Yep.
Now, whether that's an intentional... if they're being exposed intentionally so that it creates confusion and fear in people's heads and hearts, or whether it's just coming out because more people are waking up. What's your opinion, John?
Well, I think the elites have two major problems right now. One is the Apollo hoax is falling apart, and number two, 9/11 is falling apart. And they've got those two things to convince the public of, or, you know, they're going to be in sad shape.
Right. Yeah. And they're banging it out, too, because the 10th anniversary of 9/11, there was TV shows, documentaries, piled one on top of the other with emotional content in them of the survivors and the rescuers, and thrown in there is the word terrorist. And planes and fireballs and no talk of detonations or anything like that. Do you have an opinion on what brought the towers down? Being an airline pilot as well as a test pilot, you know how planes work. And you know whether those planes could have made those maneuvers and hit the towers as well as the Pentagon.
No, it's absolutely totally impossible for a plane to have done that. They were destroyed by direct energy weapons that used a method of molecular dissociation. And what they do is disassociate the molecules that made up the concrete and the steel into particles that were less than 80 microns in diameter, much, much less. And that's all there was to that.
Right, so those sort of maneuvers. What about the Pentagon?
Pentagon was a flyover, and it came over the Sitco, to the north of the Sitco, and went down to about 300 feet, did a flyover at the exact identical time that they put a bomb in that wall. And April Gallup was an Army intelligence employee, and her desk was 40 feet from that hole, and she said there was no plane, no missile, no nothing that came through there. There was no smell of gasoline, no smell of kerosene. She said there only smell of cordite, and she crawled out that hole with her six-month-old son and went over to get triage on the grass, but she said there was no indication of anything coming through there, and she was 40 feet away from it.
Well, I was very curious when I saw the footage that day, when I was watching this, all these events go down. And I was thinking, you know, as a pilot yourself, how good do you have to be able to take, you know, a huge plane almost in a landing position to hit the Pentagon?
Yeah, that's impossible. But the thing you have to start with is how are they going to disable the pilots? There's two able-bodied pilots in front. Just tell me how you're going to kill them. With a box knife? What are you going to do?
No, but assuming that, okay, somehow they managed to, disable them in some way. Could these type of individuals, with their training that they might have had, could possibly take it in, to have that ability to bring the plane without hitting the ground?
They'd been flying. They've been flying small Pipers and small Cessnas, and they get an airplane with all new equipment, new technology in the cockpit. They wouldn't know what button to press or where to look. A guy takes over an airplane at 30,000 feet. How does he know where New York is? I mean, it's not like you can see 90 miles. You can't.
No, but I'm saying even a pilot of your experience, if you were taking a plane down low, right? Because I mean how tall is the building, the Pentagon?
It was 70 feet, I think. But to get down low, it can't be done. It just,
you would have to practically land, right?
Right.
You have to be in a landing position to be able to bring it there.
At half the span of the wing, you're going to run into ground effect, and that's going to push you up. And there's no indication in the digital flight data recorder that I looked at that there's any indication that it came into that ground effect.
But if you were coming down, I don't know the topography of the area there, but I'm assuming there would be fences and, the street, the streets that are nearby.
Light poles.
You would have been taking out all kinds of stuff before you go low enough to hit the place.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, it just doesn't add up. And the fact that it doesn't add up is plastered all over the internet, and they're just not really talking about it at the political level. At least I don't hear them talking about it. Maybe somebody out there knows on the political level that they're discussing this publicly. I don't think so.
No, that's correct. They're just not going to talk about it.
I mean, it's a huge subject on the internet. I know what I got to ask you. What about Elanin? The comet Elanin, it's a big, huge hype on the internet about comet Elanin. Are you aware of that, and what are your thoughts?
It's a scam. Everybody says it's, a controlled object. If it is, I'd sure like to see it when it gets here. If it does move, it's a hologram or a holograph. But it certainly isn't anything that is coming from outer space. Like a spaceship or anything. That's just ridiculous.
Right. So comet Elanin, nothing special.
No.
Okay. What about anything else out there that you're aware of? Do you know of any objects coming towards Earth that are interesting, that are worth a second look?
No, nothing that I know of. Nothing, it's just going to be regular day in 2012, regular day in 2013.
Right. So you've got the secret of 2012, and that secret is it's the year between 2011 and 2013.
Right. That's a good one.
Okay. That's the one I use all the time on the show. 2012 is the year between 2011 and 2013, if you want to know the secret. That's it. But hey, you know what? If I'm wrong and some amazing thing happens on December 21st, 2012, I'm cool with that too. I'm easy, Yeah. If I'm living through an amazing event, then I'll have to say, oh, look, it's an amazing event, and I'm living through it.
Yep.
But I don't know. I see a lot of hype over it, and it's the hype that throws me off guard. It's the hype that makes me think that there's nothing to it. If it wasn't hyped up this much, I'd think, maybe there's something to it. But it's so hyped that whenever I see anything hyped up that much, I go, I don't think there's anything to it. And you've got filing cabinets full of prophecies that have come and gone.
Yeah.
You know? I know I have a filing cabinet full of prophecies that have come and gone, never happened. And, you know, every month the world's ending. From somebody on the internet, the world is ending at least once a month. And I'm still here, unless I'm a hologram, in which case the world did end and nobody fucking told me.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Well, it's been a pleasure, John.
It's been 2 hours, so we've got our time. I'm going to put all your information. Do you mind if I put your email address on the upcoming guests?
No, go ahead.
Okay. How about thelivingmoon.com? You want me to associate that as well?
Yeah, please.
It'd be my pleasure. Okay. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you coming. I appreciate you talking to us. And I appreciate your time and well, everything you said. It's been a very interesting 2 hours. And I hope to have you back someday talking about, hey, you know what we'll do? December 22nd, 2012, we'll do a We're Still Here show.
Okay.
We'll get everybody together.
Yeah, we'll collect all the people and we'll do the Oh Look, We're Still Here show. And it'll be great.
Okay.
Okay, have a great day, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.